Welcome to another edition of Culture Connection. This is your host, Brother Malcolm, and we are so excited today because we have one of the greats in the theater community, singer, actor, and all-around just brilliant person and human being. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce you to the great Brian Terrell Clark. Brian, what's going on?
What's going on, man? Thank you for that introduction. I wish I could just take you everywhere. You do a better self-esteem.
Brian, we're so excited to have you on the show this week. For those of you who do not know, Brian Terrell Clark is one of the leading actors in the new hit musical Motown, the musical on Broadway, currently in previews at the Fontaine Theater, and he is playing what is an incredible role as Marvin Gaye. And before we get into that information about, you know, the musical and what's going on with that, we just want to tell our listeners a little bit about you. And so I know you're a native of Baltimore, Maryland, and I'm just curious, like, what was your childhood filled with, and who do you think people should know who you were before you were this Broadway star and singer and... I know you've done so much in the entertainment industry, but what do you want folks to know about who you were coming from Baltimore?
Wow. Well, that's a great question. Well, I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. I am the son of a minister. Now she's a pastor along with her husband in Chicago, but the son of a principal who is also a minister, and then I was also the son of a blue-collar, charismatic, funny man who also had his bout with drugs. And so my childhood was really interesting because I kind of feel like I'm split between, you know, being raised by an angel and being raised by a dragon. And I actually just wrote a song about it. It's kind of funny. But yeah, man, so I feel like there was this push for education, and then there was this great push for excellence that came from my mother, a push to have a strong relationship with God. And then on the other side, I had my father, and I was kind of learning just as important life lessons from him, but they were oftentimes by his mistakes. And and so it was an interesting upbringing. I have a great relationship with them both now, my father since. You know, kicked the habit, and he's now just as much a preacher as my mother is. He's just, you know, a street prophet. So, you know, those are who my parents are. But, you know, growing up in Baltimore was interesting, man. You know, it's the wire. So, you know, most of my family lives in West Baltimore, and in West Baltimore, and then also in Baltimore County, most of the time in Baltimore County, and went to a performing arts high school, which is where I think I was really introduced to theater and the art of theater and the culture of theater. I left there and went to Temple University, where I graduated my undergraduate degree, and went on to, you know, Yale School of Drama, and then L.A. And I've been in L.A. for 6 years, and now I am in New York working on a project that is a dream come true, Matt. So in a nutshell, that's who I am.
Now, yeah. You mentioned Temple and Yale, which are two prestigious East Coast universities. Can you talk about how your experience at those two places shaped who you are and have influenced your career?
Absolutely. Temple was a great experience. The reason why I ended up going to Temple is because of its location, really. I was sneaking away from Baltimore. I attended University of Maryland for 1 year, and I was sneaking away to audition for projects. I was in all of these callbacks for Rent my first year, just way too young to be going in for the roles that I was going in for. But my mother, I actually booked a gospel play And I went on tour with that for a while and left school. And my mother, again,
the gospel play. You was on the circuit.
A gospel play. Yeah, I did this play. I was on the Chitlin Circuit. The Chitlin. Circuit of the Chitlin. Yeah, man. It was called Preacher's Kid. And it was great because it was my first time really away from home. And the cast was amazing. We had John Witherspoon. You know, Pops was on the tour with us. We had Tanya Blount. And even Destiny's Child opened with us in Baltimore. So it was... It was an amazing time. Yeah, and I got my
breakup.
That was, you know, actually it was right after the breakup. Oh. So they came in and there were these two girls. There was Farrah, who I found out, you know, her real name is Destiny. Oh, she was beautiful. I had a crush on that girl. And then there was Michelle, who was also there. And so I was like, oh wait, who are these two new girls? And but they were all so sweet and so nice. We had a great time. And then, basically, long story short, I came back home, and my mother was like, okay, that was fun. Let's finish this degree. What you doing with your life? You know, you can have the rest of your life to do what you love, but you should study. And so Temple University was wonderful because, look, in terms of location, it was in between Baltimore and New York. And also, I got a really great liberal arts education. I was really interested in a lot of different things. At one point, I was a theater major, a religious studies major, and a music major. So I got a chance to get kind of an overall well-rounded education. And I think that prepared me for the next level of concentrated study, which was at Yale School of Drama. And my time there was invaluable. I feel like I gained a way of working. I gained the confidence to be the kind of artist that I think I'm developing into at Yale School of Drama. And I mean, that education, you just can't beat it. It's one of the top in the country. And also, you're surrounded by such brilliant artists. Some of my favorite artists were at school when I was there. And so, yeah. So it's kind of like iron sharpens iron. In a place like Yale School of Drama, and I'm a better artist for it.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that you were surrounded by such artistry, because I think that the Yale School of Drama alumni, or as they call it, the mafia, is very strong in New York, particularly on Broadway. And you've landed what seems to me, and probably the most, a Broadway role of a lifetime, starring as Marvin Gaye in this new show. Can you tell us about the process and why you were drawn to the work? I recently read, or actually listened to an interview by your director, Charles Randolph Wright, where he said it's Motown authentically on Broadway. Can you talk about just this experience and what it's been like, and how did you get there?
Okay, absolutely. My road to Motown was completely divine, completely divine. I was working in L.A., and I had done Fences, and I played... Corey against Lawrence Fishburne's Troy and Angela Bassett's Rose, and it was life-changing. But while I was there, there was a director, Charles Randolph Wright, who had happened to come and see the show. And this had to be in, what, like 2006, 2007? And he saw the show, and he liked my work, and we kind of would see each other about in L.A. And I guess it maybe was a year later that I'd seen him after I had performed, I think it was Once on This Island, and he happened to mention to me that he was working on this project. It was in its early stages, but it was called Motown, and he said, I think there's a role in it for you. Long story short, I came to New York, was working on another project, and ran into the choreographer of Once on This Island, who happened to be working with Charles at the time, and he said, yeah, we're working on this project, Motown. And I said, that's crazy, because I just talked to him about it. So I emailed him and asked if it was okay if I, you know, auditioned. And he happened to be out of town. We finally got in contact with each other, and I went in and auditioned, and I auditioned for the role of Marvin Gaye for the workshop. And they politely told me no, and that they already had somebody that they were looking, that had played it before me. And amazing brother, who's really, really talented. I actually know him. And but they said, you know, we love your work, so how would you feel about being the lead singer of the Temptations? And I said, well, man, you know, anyway, you know, put me in there. you know, anywhere I can fit in, I'm there. So I did the workshop, and after the workshop, they decided to go another way with Marvin Gaye, and so I had the opportunity to come in and audition again for the role of Marvin Gaye, and they put me through the ringer. I don't know how many times I had to go in, but it had to be about 3 or 4 times. And this was for the final workshop. Yeah, man, it was for the final workshop. And I performed the role, and it was man, I had the time of my life delving into an artist who is extremely influential on the kind of work that that I do and the kind of work that I want to do. I'm a fan. I'm more than a fan of Marvin Gaye. He's an icon, you know, and he's an artist that, like I said, is extremely and has been extremely influential on myself as an artist, and you know, I'm sure many other artists. He is the king, the prince of soul, you know, and so the opportunity to really study him and to not in any way try to imitate him, but to allow the essence of who he is to be seen, and to honor his memory, and to honor his artistry, and to honor who he was as a person in the role. It was the kind of work that I wanted to do. I wasn't interested in doing a Vegas imitation. You know, I didn't want to be like one of those guys you walk past in Vegas who's playing Michael Jackson. You know, that's not the work that I was interested in. I wanted to achieve what I saw Angela achieve playing Tina Turner, what I saw Jeffrey Wright achieve playing Martin Luther King. That's the kind of work that I hoped to, you know, at least touch on. And it was an amazing experience. After we were done the workshop, they said, we love your work and we're going to look again. So I did not land the role. Brother, they put me through the ringer. I mean, it was
a process, right? I mean, for those who may not know, on Broadway, particularly when there's a project that is has a lot riding on it, just because of its historical significance and because of the people surrounding. I mean, hello, the book is written by the founder and chairman of Motown, Berry Gordy, so. On one hand, there's a lot riding on the integrity of the work, and
absolutely,
he knows who these people are through and through, and so I'm sure they were looking for as close to perfection in the heart and the song and all of those things that comprise these sort of historic, iconic Motown figures. So
absolutely.
I bet you understood the process.
Absolutely. I completely did. And then after that, I came in and auditioned a few more times. And I got a call from Charles. You know, they were very gracious with me. They went around the country looking for another Marvin. And he said, you know, honestly, you're my favorite. He said, we have to go through this process because of everything that you actually just said, Malcolm. But he said, if I don't find anybody better than you, it's yours. And when they came back to New York, I had to come in again. And I wasn't letting that role go. You know, I'm a fighter, so I wasn't playing no games. I said, by all means, go and look for whoever you need to look for, but that role is mine. So they came back to New York and I auditioned again. And long story short, here we are, and I'm playing a dream role on Broadway, and I'm grateful and really excited for the rest of the world to see the work.
Well, for those of us who have been following you, we are extremely proud of you and that work on not just Broadway, but, you know, I've seen you. I saw you in a production of Once Upon a Time Island. You've been on several L.A. stages. You've worked at the Marte Perform with Center Theater Group, with Reprise in Los Angeles, and you have just been... And then your singing talent, obviously, to play the role of Marvin Gaye is not to be forgotten, particularly... I know you love worship and gospel music, and I just, for people to get to know your work, I think they will find it's truly a pleasure to meet you as an artist. And I'm curious, as a professional black actor and singer and songwriter, what do you feel makes your artistic journey unique in comparison to maybe your colleagues in the show on Broadway or some of your classmates from the Yale School of Drama?
Wow, what makes my work unique? Here's what's interesting that you said that. I mean, I think I'm in the process in my journey where I'm learning to allow myself to be myself. And I think that that's what makes every artist unique. I think actually we come here with the gifts and the talents and the seeds of greatness already inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
The way we assimilate and we're told that only certain things are great and only certain things are acceptable, especially in the commercial marketplace. And so what happens is we begin to shift what's unique about us to try to fit in and to try to become successful based on an ever-changing plan, you know. So I think what makes me unique is the fact that God makes us all unique. And especially us as artists, I encourage every artist to try their best to get out of their own way and just to allow themselves to be their most authentic selves. So I think that I'm unique in the marketplace, and I'm unique as an artist because God made me unique. And I think that God makes us all unique. So I think that the goal is to say what you really want to say in your art, in your work. I think it's to find what your authentic voice is. And I think we all have it because whatever your point of view is helps shape who your character is. So whatever you strongly like and strongly dislike in music, whatever you strongly like and dislike in terms of what you're drawn to in writing and what you're drawn to as an actor, those things help to shape what is uniquely you. I mean, for example, Marvin Gaye had huge influences. Sinatra and jazz music was a huge influence for him, but he also loved Ray Charles. And if you listen to the different textures in his voice and over his career, you can hear influences of Sinatra, but you can also hear influences of Ray Charles. And something about that combination makes for such a unique process. He was with Harvey and the Moonglows before he broke out and was a solo artist, and that's where his ear, I think, became really, really tight when it came to harmonies and that kind of very, I call it wind-filled background, you know, stacking of harmony. He learned all that stuff with Harvey and the Moonglows and from that whole doo-wop era. So, you know, that with the combination of Sinatra, with the combination of Ray Charles, you know, and then it coming so honestly through a unique vessel makes for a very unique sound, and that's Marvin's sound, you know. And so, again, I encourage every artist out there to take their influences and just channel them through their authentic selves, and then you'll have a unique sound. It's up to the market.
I noticed you didn't talk anything about Marvin's sex appeal. I guess, brother, you are doing okay in helping the crowd, Marvin, you know, you had to be easy on the eyes.
Well, you know, Marvin is really, really interesting, man. Because Marvin was also a sex symbol, but I think oftentimes he felt boxed in and pigeonholed by the very thing that made him successful. And so, you know, when it comes to the role, thank the Lord that I don't think I'm too bad on the eyes, but you know, it is one of those things that's a part of, you know. Charles was very clear that, you know, this is a sex symbol. So when I get on stage at night, it's interesting because there's definitely a very strong reaction especially from Marvin Gaye fans. I mean, one night I know some panties are gonna get thrown on the stage. I performed at a church. It was so funny. Before we started this, the actual production, we were in rehearsal.
I love that segue. Penny goes, I performed at a church.
Well, listen, it's funny because, you know, I performed at this church and I sang What's Going On. And afterwards, someone in the congregation said, you know, I was about to throw my panties at you. And I was like, whoa. You know, so I think there's something about his music and his approach to music that I think, it definitely affects the world, but there's something in the tonality and there's something in the artistic approach that definitely speaks to, you know, the women in the world. And so singing that music, man, I'm getting great responses.
Before we end the interview, I usually like to do a little quick fire with my guests. So basically I'm just going to ask you a question, and the first thing that comes to the top of your mind, I'm going to ask that you just give me that first answer. Are you ready, Brian Terrell?
I am ready. Let's do it.
Here we go. Favorite movie?
The piano teacher.
A food you cannot live without.
Anything Asian.
A song that gets you through hard times.
Wow. If that changes, it's usually gospel. Right now, Anthony Brown has a song out called Your Presence is Water. I think the name of the song is Water. That's the song in the season right now. Water.
What's your favorite place to retreat to?
Inside my own head.
Who or what is the greatest influence on your life?
God.
What is your favorite word?
Yes.
What is your proudest moment of your life?
Right now. Talking to you about how far I've come and what this journey's been. I'm so grateful, man. This moment right now.
Wow, there you have it. And it seems so appropriate that you would say that, given that on your bio you said that Jeremiah 29:11 is a verse that obviously sustains you. And it says, "For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope." Ladies and gentlemen, please give another round of applause from your computer, your iPhone, anywhere you're listening to the Culture Connection, for a very, very, very talented human being and compassionate and wonderful friend, Brian Terrell Clark. Thank you so much. Motown the Musical is playing on Broadway now in previews. And you open this Sunday, right? April
15th. We open this Sunday, man. I can't believe we're actually finally here. So, you know, everybody gets your tickets. And I know we procrastinate on getting tickets, but we've been selling out, man. Even in our previews, we broke box office records. So if you're interested in coming to see the show, hop online and get your tickets now.
Well, thank you, Brian. And as we end every Culture Connection, remember to make a career out of humanity. Commit yourself to the noble struggle for equal rights. You will make a greater person of yourself, a greater nation of your country, and a finer world to live in. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And on that note, thank you again. We'll see you next week. Peace.
To rush and get myself on the road. Yeah, it's like 5 more minutes, they turn into 10, and before you know it, we write at it again.